Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, March 20th, 2026. We begin with page one, where the main story is about Women's History Month and business, titled Thrifting Fun Family Affair. Mother and daughter inspire each other at Two Frugals. And the name of their story is spelled Two Frugals, capitalized. So it's a play on the word gals and frugal. And this story is datelined Bloomington. For the mother and daughter running Two Frugals Thrift, the store became a way for each to encourage the other to reach for their fullest potential as women in business while helping the community. The store, which moved across the street last fall to 406 to 410 North Main Street after Neighborhood Thrift closed its doors in April 2025, is owned by matriarch Carol Wilson and managed by her youngest daughter, Jamie Wilson. Although Carol Wilson had been working in the thrifting industry in Central Illinois for over a decade, she never saw herself becoming a business owner. But her daughter, Jamie, said it was always in Carol Wilson's cards. It wasn't something on my radar in any way, shape, or form, but it just kind of happened, and here we are 10 years later, said Carol Wilson, referencing the business's upcoming 10th anniversary, which they will celebrate in July. Carol Wilson said she started the business 10 years ago with a partner after working in management and different positions while raising her three daughters, all of whom are adults now. I will say, as her family, it was expected, said Jamie Wilson. It's like, finally, she has her own store. As far as developing the business, Carol Wilson said that being in the industry for so long left her with few challenges. She already knew what she was doing, she said. With all of her existing resources, her skills in planning and organization, and her experience in other shops, Carol Wilson said the transition came easily. The business started out at East Oakland Avenue and Hannah Street, where it stayed 1.5 years before moving to their second location downtown at 417 North Main. They stayed at 417 North Main for 7.5 years before taking over their new space, allowing the Little Art School to move into their old location in September. And in their new location, the owner and manager said they are able to have a space that is bigger and brighter, allowing them to be more organized and to expand their selection of items. You're going to find brand new items to vintage items and everything in between here, Jamie Wilson said. You would not believe the things that we get donated here. It's kind of crazy sometimes. Her mother agreed. It's just like Christmas every day in here, added Carol Wilson. The business carries an array of new and used items featuring accessories, decor, books, toys, jewelry, tools, clothes, and more from 15 different vendors, of whom 12 are women. Two of the three paid workers are women. I would say that women in business has always been a passion of mine, and I have mentored and encouraged women over the years, said Carol Wilson. I think all women should live up to their fullest potential. One of her mentees is her own daughter, Jamie Wilson, who has been working as the store's manager for 2 years. Carol and Jamie Wilson, Carol said Jamie Wilson was a shoo-in for the business after having worked at the other locations while growing up with her two sisters. They've all grown up in this business. They know inside and out, Carol Wilson said of her three daughters. So it's really a family affair, she said, adding the man cave at the back of the store is run by her husband. And also like her mom, Jamie Wilson did not see herself ever being in the position she is now, working as the manager at her mom's store, but the opportunity fell into her lap after leaving a nursing career. When starting the business, Carol Wilson said she reminisced on raising her own children in the thrift business, always thrifting their clothes. And they all grew up loving thrift stores. They all go thrifting. They all go crazy. They love it, Carol Wilson said. At the store, Carol Wilson said the products are reflected by her experience as a mother, looking to have a wide selection of kids' clothes and toys in the store. She said she always hoped one of her daughters would become the second Frugal, to be her partner and to eventually take over the store, and with Jamie Wilson, she has that. Both of the two Frugals cited sustainability, reducing landfill waste, getting a great deal at a fraction of the cost, and keeping shopping unique and exciting among the most important reasons to thrift. For Jamie Wilson, she has found her favorite part of the business is interacting with the people in the community and seeing what they have to offer. "It's usually the people that make my day," Jamie Wilson said. "I love our regulars. You know, they are just so grateful, and I'm grateful for their presence here. I love that they come back and they get so much joy from being here. That just makes it for me." And our next front page story is about Unit 5, titled Fates of Carlock and Glenn Awaited, School Board Gets Final Enrollment Report. This story is datelined Normal. The potential closure of two McLean County Unit 5 elementary schools is still on the table after the final recommendations of an enrollment planning study were presented to the Board of Education this week. The district has been working with Cropper GIS Consulting for months on the study, which seeks to ensure the long-term sustainability of district facilities and reduce the district's reliance on portables. Although residents have known for months that the closure of Carlock Elementary School was a possible outcome of the planning study, most parents were first notified of the possibility of Glenn Elementary School's closure during a public information session last month. Before the consulting firm presented its report Wednesday night, about 40 supporters spoke against closing the schools during a public comment period that lasted about 2.5 hours. They questioned the transparency and community input that went into the final recommendations. Heidi Lancaster, president of Carlock's Parent Teacher Club, said many families believe Unit 5's administration is moving forward in a preferred direction rather than taking the surveys and feedback of numerous families into consideration. "That perception matters because your duty is to this community," Lancaster said. Several speakers also criticized the proposed designation of open attendance areas, which were primarily in rent-controlled neighborhoods with high populations of African American or Hispanic families. Instead of providing comprehensive, diverse environment, speakers argued these areas would help to cluster economically disadvantaged students in the same facilities and asked whether there was any research into the education equity of any zoning changes. Unit 5 Superintendent Kristen Weichel said the district's definition of an open attendance area is a location where two or more schools have been identified that a student may attend, and these areas are used to manage attendance and ensure class sizes are within range. District administration then selects where students will go based on factors such as proximity and whether there are other family members at a particular school. Students then stay at that school for the entirety of their elementary career, Weichel said. Changes that are included in both proposals include the closure of the Brigham Early Learning Center to build the new learning center for both Brigham and Sugar Creek elementary students. The Sugar Creek facility would become an exclusively K-5 school, but the northeastern corner of the zoning area would shift to attend Grove Elementary instead. The neighborhood east of Empire Street, currently zoned for Benjamin Elementary School, would be reassigned to relieve enrollment pressure. The area west of Hershey Road would move to Colleen Hughes Elementary. The portion of Cedar Ridge Elementary School's zone west of Morris Avenue would move to Pepper Ridge, while Tracy Drive, Oak Creek Plaza, Donnie Drive, and Urban Street would become an open attendance area. The neighborhood south of Rab Road and north of Orlando Avenue would also become an open attendance area to relieve Parkside Elementary. because Pepper Ridge students would be reassigned to Parkside Junior High School to take the pressure off Evans, an addition to Parkside's building is recommended. And neighborhoods east of Linden Street, north of Pine Street, and east of Henry Street would move to Normal West High School. Proposal 1. The first finalized proposal had very few changes from the draft that was presented in February. Some of the highlights include a new early learning center customized for pre-K students, a reduced reliance on portable classrooms, and enrollment relief for Benjamin, Cedar Ridge, Parkside, Towanda, Evans Junior High, and Normal Community High School. However, these changes would still come at the cost of closing Carlock and Glen Elementary Schools. Carlock student population would be redistributed between Hudson and Fox Creek Elementary Schools. Glen student population would relocate to Sugar Creek, which would have 11 open classrooms once the early learning services are relocated. Glen Elementary School would be repurposed to serve the district's 18 to 22 program, which provides essential life skills to students with disabilities over the age of 18. The report also proposes a building addition for Towanda to support another 250 to 300 students, which would eliminate the need for portables. The new Early Learning Center, depending on how many students it would serve, is estimated to cost between $20 million and $30 million. The renovation of Glen Elementary School to a new 18 to 22-year-old facility would be up to $1.5 million. The expansion of Towanda Elementary School could be between $8 million and $10 million, while a classroom addition to Parkside Junior High School is estimated at $4.4 million. In total, the construction and renovation estimates under this proposal are between $33 million and $45.9 million. The total annual savings, including staff and utilities and maintenance, could be between $1.5 million and $2.4 million. Unit 5 Chief Financial Officer Marty Hickman said staffing estimates are based on the average cost of a new hire in each position for the 2025-26 academic year and not the cost of existing staff. Existing staff would have positions in other buildings. Another $3.17 million would be saved on capital projects for the Brigham, Glenn, and Eugene Field buildings that were slated over the next 5 years. Weichel said if the board were to approve any of these changes, nothing would take place in the 2026-27 academic year. During the 2027-28 year, the plan would be to perform the boundary changes for Benjamin Elementary and Normal Community High School, close Carlock, establish the open attendance areas in the Northbrook and Tracy Drive neighborhoods, move the affected Sugar Creek students to Grove, and move the affected Cedar Ridge students to Pepper Ridge. Affected Pepper Ridge students would begin moving to Parkside in the 2028-29 year. The planned Towanda expansion and relocation of Benjamin students would begin in the 2029-30 year, along with the opening of the new Early Learning Center and the new 18-22 program at the Glen Building. Glen students would also be moved to Sugar Creek. The district would look to sell the Brigham property and the 18-22 program's former location at Eugene Field. Proposal 2. The second finalized proposal, which would not require the closure of Carlock or Glen, would shift Benjamin Elementary School neighborhoods north of Empire Street to Sugar Creek instead of Towanda. The addition to Towanda Elementary School would be smaller than what's recommended in the first proposal, but it would eliminate the school's need for portable classrooms. Carlock would remain open with the hope that the Traditions neighborhood in Western Bloomington would boost its enrollment by serving as an open attendance area. Weichel clarified that new open attendance areas would only apply to students that have moved into the neighborhood after the areas were established. Instead of repurposing Glen Elementary School, a new facility would be built or purchased for the district's 18 to 22 program. Construction and renovation estimates are between $32.3 million and $45.3 million. However, annual savings would be about $122,000, and capital savings on projects scheduled over the next 5 years would be about $1.99 million. All projects would be financed by selling bonds, which would be paid off with revenue from the 1% facility sales tax. The timeline is similar to the first proposal, but the addition to Towanda is scheduled for the 2027-28 year. The board is not expected to take any actions on Cropper GIS Consulting's recommendations until its April 15th meeting. Our next front page story is about Bloomington, titled District 87 Ahead on Sales Tax, Dateline Bloomington. Bloomington District 87 Superintendent David Mouser told the Board of Education that revenue is running ahead of projections for the 1% McLean County facilities sales tax. "It's tracking ahead of what we had estimated our highest end," Mouser told members at the meeting Wednesday at Bloomington High School, "and that does not surprise me. I mean, in McLean County, when we talk about all the events and activities that we have and folks that are coming in and shopping and dining out and all those sorts of things, we are seeing the revenue coming in pretty steadily, and it is actually above where we were planning," he added. The district estimated $6 million of revenue annually from the sales tax on prepared food, gasoline, retail, and online purchases that is distributed to public schools in the county for use on school facilities, security upgrades, and mental health services for students. McLean County voters approved the sales tax in a referendum on April 1, 2025, and it took effect in July. And the district has a live dashboard on their website that you can review. It shows that the district currently has over $3 million in revenue from the tax so far, with $2 million going to abate property taxes, something the district had promised to do. "When you think about the rest of the schools in McLean County, all are benefiting from the revenue in the exact same way, and in turn, that means our kids and our communities are benefiting as well," Mouser said. Representatives from Commerce Bank presented updates to the board on three investment funds: the John Scott Vocational Educational Fund, the Bloomington Schools Medical Benefits Fund, and the Bloomington Public School District 87 Foundation Fund, all of which the bank has managed since 2012. "The Scott and Foundation funds are invested more aggressively," said Adam Meyer, Commerce Bank portfolio manager. "Both showed a 14% revenue growth in the last 12 months and an average of 8.5% over the life of the investment, according to his presentation. The Medical Benefits Fund is invested more conservatively," Meyer said, "with a growth of 7% over the last 12 months and averaging 4% over the investment's lifetime. These funds are very healthy," said District 87 Chief Financial and Facilities Officer Michael Cornelli. "There's very limited impact or pressure on them as far as withdrawals. They're mostly sitting there as an asset. They have the ability to do these off projects that we might have that come up over time. The Medical Benefits Fund needs to be less liquid than the other two because there are more deposits and withdrawals in a given year," Cornelli said, "versus the John Scott Trust, where we're only maybe taking one or two withdrawals total through a year." Cornelli also presented the first reading of the district's 2026-27 student handbooks. Major changes include a new mission and vision statement that the board has yet to approve, and a new grade point average system for incoming freshmen that the board members present at the meeting wanted clarified. "There's opportunities with Raiders 101 and things like that where they're getting that introduction to Bloomington High School," Cornelli said, referring to the high school orientation program. Board member Elizabeth Fox Anvik also suggested that the high school include a welcome letter from the principal, as the junior high does. I'll work on a potential welcome letter, and I'll work on a table to try to help everyone work through the GPA and when it starts to apply to folks, Cornelli said. I think that's the most important thing. The board will hear further updates in subsequent meetings. The board approved several action items, including a renewal of the IHSA membership, purchasing new radio systems for school resource officers, and flooring improvements, but there was an item that Board President Charles Irwin paused on for comment. The action item would approve the purchase of furniture for the Sarah Raymond Early Education Center, but a board member who was not present had communicated with Irwin that they wished to table the item for a special session or for next month's meeting. Irwin said he told the board member, whom he did not name, that he would ask board members at the meeting for a second to the motion in order to bring the motion for approval. However, there was no second, and the motion died. Present board members approved the purchase, and three board members were absent: Mark Wiley, Valita Harvey, and Courtney Turnbull. And our last front page story is about the Mideast war, titled "Sources Say Pentagon Seeks $200 Billion More for Iran War." This is an Associated Press story datelined Washington. The Pentagon seeks $200 billion in additional funds for the Iran war, a sizable amount that is certain to be met with questions from Congress, which would need to approve any new money. The department sent the request to the White House, according to a senior administration official who spoke on condition of anonymity. Asked about the figure at a press conference Thursday, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth did not directly confirm the amount, saying it could change. "It takes money to kill bad guys," Hegseth said. But he said, "We're going back to Congress and our folks there to ensure that we are properly funded." It is an extraordinarily high number and comes on top of extra funding the Defense Department already received last year in President Donald Trump's big tax cuts bill. Such a request would need to be approved by Congress, and it is not at all clear such spending would have political support. Congress has been bracing for a new spending request, but it is not clear the White House transmitted the request for consideration. Lawmakers did not authorize the war, and Congress is showing growing unease with the military operations scope and strategy. The new funding request was first reported by the Washington Post. The White House did not answer further questions Thursday about the $200 billion request. House Speaker Mike Johnson said, "It is a dangerous time, and we have to adequately fund defense." While the House and Senate are controlled by the president's Republican Party, many of the more conservative lawmakers are also fiscal hawks with little political appetite for big spending. Most Democrats are likely to reject such a request and demand more detailed plans from the Trump administration about the U.S. military goals and objectives. Representative Ken Calvert, Republican of California, the chair of the House subcommittee with oversight of defense spending, said he was already advocating for a supplemental spending bill to allow the Pentagon to replenish munitions. That was going to happen, and now we have this conflict with some additional costs, so that is where we're at, Calvert said Thursday. I know there are peripheral issues out there that people are concerned about, but right now this is about our national security, and it's important that we get this done, he said. But Representative Betty McCollum, Democrat of Minnesota, the ranking Democrat on the House subcommittee with oversight of defense spending, said the president took the U.S. into a war without coming to Congress, and she is demanding more details. This is not going to be a rubber stamp for the president of the United States, McCollum said. She said Congress is still waiting for the administration to explain where it would spend the additional $150 billion funding that went into the Pentagon through Trump's tax and spending cut bill. It's also waiting on the president's budget request for this year. I'm not writing blank checks to the Department of Defense, McCollum said. The requested amount would be a hefty boost to the Pentagon's annual budget, which Congress approved at more than $800 billion for the current fiscal year. That's on top of some $150 billion that Congress gave the Defense Department in last year's tax cuts bill, much of it for specific projects and overall upgrades to the Pentagon's operation. Iran intensified its attacks on oil and natural gas facilities around the Gulf on Thursday, raising the stakes in a war that is sending shockwaves through the global economy. The strikes in retaliation for an Israeli attack on a key Iranian gas field sent fuel prices soaring and risked drawing Iran's Arab neighbors directly into the conflict. Tehran's targeting of energy production further stressed global supplies already under pressure because of Iran's stranglehold on the Strait of Hormuz, a strategic waterway through which a fifth of the world's oil is transported. Underscoring the danger to ships in the region, a vessel was set ablaze off the coast of the United Arab Emirates and another damaged off Qatar. But efforts to bypass the strait were also under pressure. An Iranian drone hit a Saudi refinery on the Red Sea, which the country hoped to use as an alternative exit route. Brent crude oil, the international standard, spiked to as high as $118 a barrel, up more than 60% since Israel and the United States started the war. The European benchmark for natural gas prices rose 17% on Thursday and has doubled in the past month. Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE denounced the Iranian attacks. Arab League Secretary General Ahmed Abu Ghait called them a dangerous escalation. And we turn now to some local news. Normal Police Department says shots fired on Gulf Crest Road. The Normal Police Department is investigating gunfire reported Wednesday night. About 9:11 p.m., officers were dispatched to the 700 block of South Gulf Crest Road for a report of shots fired in the area, according to a news release. Officers spoke with witnesses and collected evidence from the scene. No victims were located and no injuries reported. Normal Police said this appeared to be an isolated incident with no ongoing threat to the community. The police department did not indicate whether any arrests have been made, but the investigation is ongoing. Anyone with information related to the gunfire is asked to contact the Normal Police Department. To provide an anonymous tip, you can text Normal PD to 847-411, followed by a space and your tip information, or you can download the Normal PD app. You may also phone the Normal Police Department. And here are some news briefs. West's mock trial team, state champs. Normal West High School's mock trial team won first place in the Illinois State Bar Association's high school mock trial competition last weekend. The competition took place March 14 and 15 at Lincoln Land Community College in Springfield. Normal West competed against 56 other schools from throughout the state for the competition. The program previously won second place in state 3 years ago and third last year, but this marks only the second time a downstate team has won the state competition and the first in Normal West history, according to a news release. The team will now work on a new and more complicated case next month and will have the opportunity to present it at the National High School Mock Trial Tournament planned for early May in Des Moines, Iowa. The Normal West team will be the only team representing the state in the tournament, according to the news release, and Normal West congratulated Coach John Bierbaum, Attorney Bob White, and the team for their accomplishment in a Facebook post this week. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, March 20th, 2026. I look forward to reading part two with you next.